Welcome to the All In Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Watson. I'm a proud father, husband, son, former athlete, and business owner of the LAVIPH&T. The All In Podcast is a dynamic audio experience where we interview the brightest minds in sports, entertainment, and business. Join me as I host real conversations with industry elite top performers that foster growth and development, which leads to success in life and business for our listeners. Being all in is my mantra, and it's what I live by. I hope that you find value in this podcast, and I look forward to connecting with you on the other side. Let's go. Welcome to the All In Podcast. I'm your host, Rod Watson. Today, we have a very special guest, one that hits home for me, Mr. Drew Lasker, who is a father, he's a husband, and also professional athlete who has been with the Newcastle Eagle for the last 7 years, also a 9-time BBL champion. He's definitely been a huge inspiration to me in my life, and just so happens to be one of my cousins. Family ties here, so we're going to dive into this podcast, get to know Drew, a little bit about his history. He's also a coach. He also runs two businesses, one in the UK, one in the United States, training, which I've grown to love and follow and see all the body of work that he's been producing in both the UK and the United States. So without further ado, welcome, Drew.
What's up, cuz, man? Thanks for having me on, man.
It's great. Well, you know, you got a lot of things going right now. You're constantly on the move, and you're now a new father. You just welcomed Jaden, is that right?
Yep, Jaden Andrew.
Yep. He's now a month old?
Yeah, 5 weeks. 5 weeks Saturday.
So how's that been now, being a father to your second child? You have a daughter, Callie Mae, and now you have a son. So you balanced it out right now, 50-50.
Yeah, I got lucky, man. I know it's, you know, having one of each, and I've always wanted three. So I was giving myself a little leeway if it wasn't a boy, but it's awesome, man. It's tough, but, you know, I wouldn't have any other way.
Yeah, man, fatherhood is definitely it can be challenging. It's a great experience, to say the least. So seeing your children born is just a life-changing experience. You know, of course, I have three daughters, and you know this. I was there for the birth of all three of our girls, and each time it's like seeing it for the first time and yeah. Just seeing them come into the world and hearing that first cry and seeing their expressions and just the fact that they, you know, was in your wife's, you know, and for me, my wife's womb for 9 months, and you've been waiting and anticipating their arrival. And then finally, when they get here, it's like, man, this is absolutely real. So I'm really, really happy for you now, man. Now you got a son, so you can pass on that Drew Last legacy in basketball. You know, hopefully he'll be a hooper just like you.
Yeah, I mean, I always said that it didn't actually matter because, you know, Callie Mae, if I didn't have a son, she was going to hold down the legacy because yeah. I could see it in her, man. She's definitely an athlete.
Yeah. Well, Callie Mae, she's interesting, man. She's got her own personality. It seems like she's still running the house so far until Jaden's able to get in and compete a little bit.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Especially now. She's doing a little bit of extra. She's kind of acting a little bit out of character now that Jaden's here because, you know, just trying to fight for that attention. And we kind of did our research up on that, so we kind of expect it. So, you know, we're just doing our best just to balance the two.
Well, let's talk about Drew Lasker. And you mind sharing a little bit about, you know, where you're from, your background, and where you currently are before we kind of start diving in and getting to know you a little more and talking about your success as a professional athlete and also as a trainer?
Yeah, absolutely. My first memories are derived from Germany. I grew up in Germany. I moved there, I think I was about six. And I lived there for 3.5 years. And those are where my first memories are from. And then we moved back to the States and we kind of darted around a little bit. And then my dad, he got stationed back in Germany again. And so during that time, things had kind of changed in Germany. So we kind of decided as a family, my mother and my dad, that it'd be best for us to stay in the States. So we actually went back to Texas, back home out in Brookshire. We actually ended up deciding that, you know, allowing my dad to continue traveling. And then we just kind of wanted a little bit of stability. My mom wanted a little bit of stability for us because I was getting older. By eighth grade, I ended up transferring to Katy High School, going to school there, graduating there. And then, you know, the story is kind of funny. I ended up meeting you during this time, you know, during my recruiting process as I was transitioning from going from a high school basketball player to a college basketball player. I was introduced to you, you know, playing pickup ball at Faith West Academy. And, you know, I owe you a lot because you changed the trajectory of my life, because at the time I was actually going to a junior college and you presented the opportunity that, you know, I have an opportunity to go out to school in California to an NAIA school. At the time, I didn't know what NAIA was, but yeah. I just remember you kept saying that, you know, you can go to junior, because I was like any other kid, you know, you want to go Division I basketball, and that's what something that I always dreamed of. But you kept saying to me that you can go to JUCO, but there's no guarantee that you can go to Division I and you kind of lose 2 years. So yeah. it's kind of like that saying, like a bird in the hand is worth two in the bush. Why not go ahead and grab this opportunity where you get an opportunity to go to San Diego, California, get your degree. And so I ended up going there, and it ended up being the best decision of my life. California is dear to me. You know, that's where we, you know, we named our daughter after California, you know, short for Cali. And yep. So from there, ended up getting a pro deal out in the UK. And, you know, I've been out here ever since. You know, I'm going on my 16th season, suiting up for Newcastle Eagles for my 8th year. And this has been a whirlwind, man. I wouldn't have been yeah. able to script this.
Well, it's interesting. You talk about how us connecting changed the trajectory of your life and your career. I mean, it kind of did the same for me. You know, I had 3 years of college before you actually arrived on the scene. You know, for those you don't know, Drew and I played in college together. He was a freshman and I was a senior at San Diego Christian, which at that time it was Christian Heritage when we were attending yeah. and they changed the name to San Diego Christian College. And, you know, when I saw you playing in the summer times at Faith West, you know, that was an opportunity. We were competing, playing at a high level, and there was a lot of competition. And I was like, dang, this kid not only looks familiar, but damn, he stands out. He's athletic. He dunking on people, you know, 6'1", 6'2", he dunking on people twice his size. And you were standing out. And one of the things I realized was like, shit, this not only is this kid athletic, but he plays hard and he's got a good attitude and he competes. And at that point, you know, I remember coach telling me, hey, if you see any talent back home, let me know. You know, we're looking for, you know, a swing man, someone that can play the 2-3 spot, athletic. And I was like, bingo, this is the dude. This is it. Not knowing that that was my cousin. You know, I hadn't seen you since you were, shit, a baby. You know, it had been a while. So, of course, I saw some resemblance, but I couldn't make the connection, right? And mm-hmm. when you talk about changing the trajectory of your life, you know, when I was in college, you know, I had my challenges. It was a lonely place at times, you know, for me, because coming from a background where growing up in Texas, seeing a lot of people that look like you and I, and coming to a place in California, a small Christian school where it was like we were one of three, you know, of the whole, you know, student body population of like maybe 1,000 students or 500, whatever that number was. It was challenging. And then having you there my last year was really great because, you know, I not only had a chance to play with you, but we bonded. Like, I think, you know, we truly bonded. And I had other siblings and we didn't really get a chance to grow up together because of how life was. My mom and dad got divorced early. Of course, my dad had, you know, kids with other women. And, you know, we would see each other on holidays and things like that. But it was truly a blessing for me to be able to have you a part of that process and that journey. And seeing you mature and grow, not just, you know, during that time I was playing with you, but well after that, when I left the game and then came back and coached in college, it was just an amazing experience. You know, it opened my eyes to just, you know, when you have someone next to you that one looks like you, two actually happens to be your family, and three, you know, competes and plays hard just as you do, you get it. It was like we were synchronized. We didn't have to think about things. I knew where you were on the floor. I knew you had my back. I had yours. We shared that experience together, and that's something that I'm forever, you know, grateful for. And I'm happy you made the decision to come out and attend, because it was a lonely place for me. I don't think I ever told you that. It was a struggle for me my first 3 years. You know how my relationship was with coach, and we didn't see eye to eye all the time. And that was a growing process for me too as well. But having you there, it loosened things up, you know, and it opened up more opportunities for us to thrive as young men in the college level playing out here in California. And I think it really was a pivotal moment for me in my life, because I knew that there was going to be a point that basketball was no longer going to be there. And I was like, I had to figure out what I was going to do. And having that opportunity to share the game and in those experiences with you my last year really meant a lot for me. So I just wanted to let you know that, because we never really, you know, we had a lot of conversations, but we never really have gone into what I was going through at that particular point in time. And so being back home that summer, I don't know if you knew this, but I was thinking about not going back to Christian Harris. I was thinking about going to a HBCU, historically black college. Mm-hmm. So I had talked to Prairie View Southern and someone else I had spoke to back there, TSU, that's who it was, mm-hmm. Texas Southern. So I was considering those three schools. And, you know, of course, I knew I could go in and play, and it was Division I. And that was the one thing that was my dream that I wanted to accomplish. But after connecting with you, when you talk about changing the trajectory, I mean, I was dead set. I told Coach I wasn't coming back, basically told him, fuck you. You know what I mean? Just because of the way things were going and the relationship, it was really rocky at that particular point in time. And I didn't agree with the way he was trying to handle me. And so, you know, I was done with Christian Heritage. And I don't think I ever told you that, but I was really close to going to Prairie View or possibly Texas Southern. Of course, it was opportunity to be back home, and I've been gone for so long. So seeing you play that summer changed everything. It brought me back to the point to where I was, you know, called coach. It was like, hey, if I come back, then this guy's got to come, and I got somebody for you, right? And it ended up working out in the long run. But at that particular point in time, when I was home that summer, I really was, you know, kind of up in the air and was like, you know, I'm done with this place and let me find better opportunities ahead. And then here you are in the gym playing and hooping. And it showed me a different side that, you know, I could have forgiveness. I could also, you know, be willing to take this opportunity to have this once in a lifetime experience to play with you on the court. So I'm thankful that we got those opportunities to compete. You remember, I never forget the national tournament in Oklahoma City. For those of you who don't remember, Drew had this out-of-body experience where there was this, I think Brad shot or maybe Rich shot the ball and missed it. The ball bounced like another 5 or 8 feet off the rim. And he comes out of nowhere like Grant Hill, catching it with one hand and tipping it back in. And at that moment, I said, he's going to be a pro one day. He was a freshman. He wasn't a redshirt freshman. He was a true freshman. He should have started the entire year. But unfortunately, coach decided to play Matt in that role the entire season, which I wasn't happy about. I felt like we would have won more games. Those experiences I'm still pissed about, because I believe we would have won a national championship that year if you were in the starting lineup. That's just my honest opinion. But that one experience right there was like one of those things where I was like, damn, not only can he jump, but shit, it's just the way you went up and you caught the ball and finished. You know what I mean? Like you've been there before. And at that moment, I was like, he's going to be all right. Well, after my departure, he's going to be all right. So take me, I got a couple of questions for you. We talk about your early part before entering college. And I just wanted to share that. I know that was kind of long-winded, but I wanted to share that for those of you that know, you know, him, Drew and I, you know, we share a special bond. And I can go on and on about experiences that we had competing on the floor. Having that experience playing overseas, you know, you think about Kobe Bryant, right? Mm-hmm. Kobe, similar to you, had an experience where he grew up in Italy, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. How did that experience shape you from a standpoint of becoming the person you are today and the player that you are being overseas? And now here it is, over 30 years later, you're back living overseas. Did you ever think that would ever happen? And how did that shape you living there when you were a child?
I never thought about that. But, you know, now that I'm older, I really start to reflect on every situation that's happened in my life. And I'm a firm believer that everything happens for a reason. Like it seemed like everything has just happened perfectly the way, you know, my life is shaped out. And growing up in Germany has definitely shaped me tremendously. It's the reason the way I am. I always feel like I'm just different from the, you know, normal person. Sometimes I feel like I'm a little bit weird, just my mindset. Like I think growing up in Germany allowed me to be open-minded. You know, I remember when I first came back to the States, and I think it might've been like third or fourth grade. And I remember just like, you know, people picking on me because they just, you know, the way that I spoke. So when I moved back to the States, I went to an all black school, and they constantly made fun of me the way that I would talk, you know, because, and I'm just naive. I'm like, I don't understand what you guys are talking about. Like, I don't, you know, I was totally naive to that. And, fast forward and that everything that's happened and the way my life is shaped out, I feel like that experience in Germany made me an open-minded person to where I'm adaptable. Like, I feel like I'm a chameleon. You put me in any type of situation, a room full of black people, room full of white people, whatever, room full of rich people, room full of poor people, I feel like I can relate and I feel like I can just kind of blend in. Yeah. And now that I actually live overseas, it's come back full circle. Being a professional overseas, living here is a grind. It's not easy. A lot of us don't really talk about how difficult it is. And if you aren't open-minded, you are going to struggle because it is completely different from your way of life in the States, you know, to the way you eat, the way you speak, the way you live, everything is different. And to be successful overseas, there's so many factors. It's not just your ability. The off the court stuff is just as important, because if you're not a comfortable off the court, then that's going to translate to on the court. You know, I've seen a lot of guys just, you know, struggle, whether it's the weather, whether it's the food or the culture, and that has affected the way that they played. Yeah. And fortunately, that's had an effect on their career, you know, that's shortened Absolutely. Their career. So I feel like that experience really, really shaped me. I'm so thankful that I'm a military kid and I had the experience of living in different places, being in different type of cultures. It's definitely helped me.
Well, you know, you talk about being teased and, you know, being treated differently by the way that you spoke and attending a predominantly all black school, you know, which Kobe actually had some of those similar experiences when he left Italy and came back to Philly, and a lot of the kids teased him about the way that he talked and, you know, the way he carried himself. Let's talk about, how did you adapt once you transitioned into the, you know, back to the U.S.? And you talk about being in an all black school where, you know, predominantly I went to all black school, and you know, typically the way the culture is when you talk about fitting in, it's, you know, hip hop was really big in their, you know, early to late 90s. And being a kid coming from Europe to all of a sudden you're here in the U.S., can you talk about what, aside from being teased, when you're making that transition back into the U.S., you know, you're back around family, but now you're in this environment where people look like you, they don't accept you the way that, you know, they do their other peers. How did you really handle that process? And what was that like as you tried to transition and integrate back into the school system and also participate in sports?
It was tough, man. I'm not going to lie. There wasn't a term for it then, but now we call it bullying. And yeah. I got bullied a lot. And I felt like I was never really accepted. Like when I went to an all black school, I felt like I wasn't good enough because of the way I spoke. And then when I moved to Katy to an all white school, I felt like I wasn't good enough because I wasn't smart enough, you know? Yeah. So, you know, I was always kind of in that middle ground, but you know, and it was tough. I would have to say there were a couple people who had my back, you know, because there's a lot of guys that try to pick fights with me and just try to test me all the time. But basketball was my saving grace. I grew up playing basketball in Germany. I wouldn't say I loved it. I just was something that I did. Yeah. When I moved back to the States, I fell in love with it when I was introduced to Michael Jordan. And I paid attention to how people treated him, how like he was a god, right? And during this time, like, I'm being bullied and not really accepted. And I kind of gravitated to him, and I gravitated to the fact that if I can get really good at this game, then, you know, people might respect me. And that's all I ever wanted. Like, from that, when I realized that basketball can allow people to look at you differently, then that's when I started to focus all my energy in it.
Well, you know, it's interesting you bring that up. We have some parallels, and it's no surprise at how we connected from the jump when we saw each other and got reunited. When you talk about, I wasn't bullied as much, but when I was in school, I got in trouble a lot and I fought a lot because, you know, as you said, kids want to test you. You know, and I went to all black school before my mom moved me out of the, you know, inner cities of Fifth Ward, and we moved to Katy, just as you did. I had those experiences of, you know, when you're in all black school, it's like you're constantly fighting or you're constantly trying to defend yourself or prove yourself because you're being tested every day. And then going to a white school, as you stated, you don't feel smart enough. You don't feel like you truly fit in, you know, and obviously in Texas, you know, we still deal with racism. It's still prevalent. You know, it's the South, you know, it's segregation. And then being put in an all white school and you're sitting in a classroom, you're two black students, one of two black students or one of three black students in a classroom. And that's challenging. You're trying to figure out what your identity is, who you are. But you shared something that I had a similar experience and it resonated, you know, with me so much as Michael Jordan. I remember when I first saw Michael Jordan, they had the Air Jordan t-shirt with the sneakers that looked like they're hanging over the shoulder. Now I was just like, what is this? You know, and then when I actually saw him play, because the first thing I saw about Michael Jordan was on the Wilson basketballs and it had his name written on it in cursive. And I'm like, who's this guy, Michael Jordan? And dudes was hooping with it outside. And I saw the t-shirts. And then when I actually saw him play, the same feeling, I wanted to be accepted and respected, you know, and that was the exact same feeling that I had. And it showed me that if I could just get even close to that, people would treat me differently. Yes. And I wouldn't be looked at as just as a black kid, or I wouldn't be having to constantly prove myself. I was accepted once people saw that I could play basketball and play at a high level. And that really changed my life. And I think it saved my life in some ways, as I'm sure you can probably share the same for you, even though we grew up a little bit different experiences. But it helped me stay focused. It helped me, gain this whole new level of passion and drive to prove myself and to show that I could not only play the game, but I could play it at a high level and I could be as close to being an athlete as Michael Jordan was. Even though I didn't have his athleticism or his height, I felt like I had his heart and I felt like I had his drive. And that pushed me. That pushed me to excel and to do better in the classroom, because I wasn't a good student at the time. I struggled with a lot of the things with just my self-confidence and what was going on in my life. My father wasn't around. He was at that point in time, he was locked up and in prison. So that was tough, and then being moved out to an all predominantly white school, I wasn't happy about that. Even though being in a predominantly black school had its challenges, I was comfortable there, to say the least, even though dealing with the things that, I was suspended a lot from school, and all of it was really around fighting. So when Michael Jordan came on the scene back in, this was like 1987, 88 for me, and I saw those first pair of, actually it was 84, take that back, it was 84, 85, I saw those first pair of Jordan 1s, man, and that was like the red, black, and white. And I remember saying, Mom, can you get me a pair? And she's like, boy, them shoes are $125. You better get a job. And now they dropped you $1,600 and $1,200 for some sneakers, man. It's crazy. But no, man, I mean, Jordan, I would say, inspired a lot of young black kids and had a very profound impact that not only did he transcend the game, I think he transcended the African-American community, where basketball became an outlet for a lot of kids like you and I that were struggling in life or just having a tough time finding our identity and who we were as young black men. Because make no mistake, the American school system is not oftentimes the best place for young black males. I say that not in a negative way, but I say that as it's factual. The challenges that you face, with figuring out your identity and, as you mature and really trying to find your place and purpose in this world, you don't get that direction or that guidance or that support in the American school system as an African-American male. So it's interesting to hear you share how Jordan had that profound impact on your life.
As I think about it, had I not gotten bullied and not kind of desired that respect, I don't know if I would be where I am today, because, I poured all of that energy into trying to be great at basketball. And during the process is when I actually fell in love with the game. Had that not happened, I don't know if I would have ever, had the same passion and drive for this game. So I'm actually thankful that I went through that experience, because it made me who I am today.
When was that point for you when you realized that, I can potentially not only play in high school, but I have opportunity to play in college?
Man, what's weird is that, it's always been a roller coaster. It was never a moment where I was like, okay, dang, I'm really good. Because every time I felt that way, I was knocked back to reality. Because when I went to school at Royal, I was the talk of the town. Like, this kid's going to be great. He's going to be the one. And then I go to Katy the next year in eighth grade and I make C team. Yeah. So I'm like, well, I must not be as good as I thought I was. Then going into high school, freshman year, I'm balling out, averaging 15 points a game. Then football season finishes and all the football players come, and then I'm at the bench. Yeah. And in my sophomore year, I start on JV, and I'm like, okay, here it is. Okay, it might be.
This is it.
And then my junior year, I sit on the bench the whole year for varsity. And then my senior year was just like I was playing the five and I was out of position. And so
five? Coach, yeah, I played playing the five?
I played the five my senior year. I was the second tallest on the team. I was guarding Emeka Okafor, the Charlotte Bobcats. I was playing the five. But the crazy thing is during all of this time, during this process, I always believed that it would happen. I always believed that I would play pro, that I would play college. I didn't know how it was going to happen, because I'm looking at someone like Adam Hall, who's two years above me. Yeah. And he's one of the best in the country, and he has coaches coming to every practice.
ACC.
And I knew I wasn't even close to his level, but I just still had that belief and faith that it was going to work itself out.
Well, that's key, man. When you talk about belief, if you want to succeed in life, no matter what it is you're doing, it starts with an unprofound belief in oneself. And going back to what I shared before, we have some similarities in life. And I remember in high school, just like yourself, I was getting a lot of praise in junior high. And I would come over to May Creek High School when I was in junior high and play with the high schoolers. And they all thought I was in high school, and I was handling them. You know what I mean? Like, I could hoop. Mm-hmm. And I'm playing against, you know, freshmen, juniors, and varsity players in open gyms. And I remember the coach, Coach Howe at the time, he was like, hey, you're at May Creek Junior High. And he was like, we got to get you over here workouts with our, you know, our freshmen and our sophomores and JV players. And I would go over after school and work out and play against those guys. And I just remember just saying, you know, this is it. This is your opportunity. This is how you're going to make it out of your situation. Just keep believing in your ability. And, you know, I started on varsity as a sophomore and then went on to play, you know, on varsity my junior and senior year. But I remember having dreams around my senior year about playing in college, and just vividly, I didn't have a vision of what school it was, but I was in games and just playing at the college level and hearing the fans in the stands. And looking back subconsciously, I had planted that seed from back when I was in junior high, having visions of watching Duke and Grant Hill and all those guys playing Bobby Hurley. I remember, when I'm getting in college, I'm going to bust Bobby Hurley ass. You know what I mean? I couldn't stand Duke. I wanted to go to North Carolina. You know, I just remember having those vivid dreams, man, and just believing that I was one day going to, you know, play at the college level. So it's kind of ironic to hear you share that. Tell me about the preparation. I mean, man, you know, your dad was a military guy. And, you know, guys, for those of you who have grew up, you know, in the military, Drew's talked about moving around. And that's a common thing with military families. They move a lot. And there's oftentimes, you know, a lot of uncertainty when it comes to, you know, being a child that's, you know, has parents that are in the military. In this case, Drew's dad was in the military. Your dad was more like a gentle soul, very quiet and meek, but I knew at times he was very stern and structured and disciplined. So tell me about, how did that experience growing up being a military kid help you?
Like I said, as I got older, like I start to really, really reflect on my entire life. And I never really thought that my parents had really a foot in the basketball success, because like my dad didn't play basketball. My mom, you know, she was working, so she didn't really get an opportunity to come to a lot of games. She came to a couple, yeah. But like this basketball journey, it's just been me. Like it's been me at the park, just trying to go anywhere to play basketball. And I'm thankful that my mom allowed me the freedom to go play, you know, that freedom to go wherever they were playing at. But now that I'm older and I start to reflect, I have an appreciation for my parents, because they might not had a, you know, like a direct input on where I am as far as like in basketball, but indirectly they've had, because all of the traits have come from them. When I think about my dad being in the military for 22 years, going in two wars, Desert Storm and then Iraq, and how like being in the army, you have to be disciplined. And like you said with me, like I'm very disciplined. If I'm working towards something, I'm going to do it. You tell me that this will help me, I will do it. I will listen to anybody that I think that can help me. And then when I think about my mom, like my mom has always worked, and she's always worked hard, and she's always been so organized when it comes to, you know, bills and all these other kind of things. And like, so marrying those two traits together has just created this, what you see. And so I'm so thankful for my mom and dad, because all of the traits that they've had are instilled in me. It is the reason why I've been able to make it so far, because to be able to make it far, like you gotta love this. You gotta be willing to grind every single day, every morning.
Yeah.
And as soon as you take your foot off the gas, you know, someone else will be able to come through the cracks. So
yeah,
it's been a huge impact on me.
Well, that's awesome to hear, because, you know, I've watched you since, you know, we made the connection back in 2000, and seeing your journey and seeing just how structured and disciplined you are with your work ethic. You know, you've had a very successful career from the time we played together at Christian Heritage until when you transferred, and I was then coaching you at Point Loma Nazarene. You end up becoming an All-American, and now you're in the Hall of Fame at Point Loma Nazarene, Basketball Hall of Fame. Seeing that journey and watching you day in and day out with the repetition of your work ethic, your habits, it's definitely been an inspiration. You've been able to have a 16-year career playing professionally in Europe and playing at a high level, and being able to win 9 BBL titles is not an easy thing, folks. I mean, people think going overseas is like, oh, it's low-level basketball. Let me share with you, it's not. It's guys that are there that can play in the NBA that just haven't gotten or been fortunate enough to have the opportunities, or they played in the NBA and for whatever reason, it didn't work out. And now they're overseas playing in the BBL or other top leagues. So tell me a little bit about that journey. Because I remember before you even got your opportunity to go overseas, you were playing with, what was that league? Oh, sorry, that
Athletes in Action.
Yeah, you were playing with Athletes in Action. Talk about that. Because I remember having phone calls with you and you were in North Carolina and these other places. Mm-hmm. And you were touring with the team and you didn't know how things were going to turn out. Talk about that experience and that journey and how it ended up landing you with an opportunity to play overseas professionally that started the whole process.
You know, so like you mentioned, I was a two-time All-American. You know, I had the resume to be able to have an opportunity to play overseas. But because I played in an NAIA school, small schools, when it came down to actually getting the deal, you know, the agent at the time was telling me that, that they didn't believe my stats would translate because, you know, my junior year, I led the league in rebounding as a guard. My senior year, I think I was second. And, you know, I was, you know, those 2 years I was top five in scoring.
Yeah.
And, you know, their belief was there's no way this guy would be able to rebound at this level. He's only rebound like that because he's played at NAIA. So, you know, so when it came to deciding about bringing a player in, if it was between someone like myself who's had a great career at a small school or someone who's played at UCLA and play like 10 minutes a game, you know, they would always go with that guy that they've seen on TV. So, you know, it comes the end of the summer and I don't have anything. And, you know, Coach Wilmore calls me to his office and says he gets a phone call from John Farwell from Athletes in Action. They, you know, they discovered me. They want me to come out to North Carolina for 3 months to training camp and travel around the East Coast with them. And at the time, I was working at Enterprise, rent a car at the airport in San Diego.
I remember that.
And, you know, and I was like, I'll take it. Whatever it is, if it's an opportunity, I'll take it. So I dropped everything, left everything in San Diego, flew to North Carolina, lived with the host family. And, you know, we started practicing every day and we were playing Division II schools up and down the East Coast. And after that, it was nothing that came from it. So now we get to November. You know, that gig's up. I fly back to San Diego and, you know, I have a decision to make. I'm like, I can't go back to Enterprise because I told them I was going pro. So my pride would not let me go back and ask for my job back. So, you know, I ended up deciding to go back to Texas. I got in my car, drove back to Texas, shacked up with my grandma, and I actually ended up transferring to Enterprise Rent-A-Car in Texas. And, you know, I was working a part-time. But with Athletes in Action, they were taking European tours during the season. So every couple of months, we'd be going overseas. And so you had to raise your own money and all that. So I was working to fund that. And, you know, throughout that year, 2004, 2005, I went to Kazakhstan, Israel, all places around around Europe, and still got no deal. So we fast forward a year, 2005, August, I get a phone call that they're taking one last trip to England. And, you know, I'm like, well, Coach, I don't have the money. You know, like I mentioned, you had to pay for these trips yourself. So I remember the host family that I stayed with, North Carolina, that he said to me, his name was Chris. He said, hey, if you ever need anything, just let me know. I got a bunch of miles and I would transfer them to you. So if you ever need a flight, just reach out. I sent them an email and I said, hey, I got this opportunity to take this last trip over to England, but I don't have the money. Do you have any miles I can borrow? He wrote me back and said, sure. You know, he transferred me the miles and that's how I got a flight to the UK. You know, I take this trip and in my mind, I know that this is it. If I don't get anything, I've been out a year. I've been in this kind of like this kind of wheel, the spinning wheel for a year. Yeah. You know, I got to, you know, sometimes you just kind of got to suck it up and go with reality. And I was like, OK, I'll just, you know, start looking for a career in corporate America.
Yeah.
And so I get to the UK and, you know, it was promoted as like all these other camps is going to be all these pro coaches there. I get there as one coach and one coach. And I'm like, you know, kind of deflated. But, you know, me, I play hard and do what I do. 20 minutes into the workout, I pull my hamstring and I'm just like, that's it.
Yeah.
But after that workout, John comes up to me and he's like, hey, you know, the coach, he wants to speak to you. And I'm like, who, me? I'm surprised because I'm like, I only trained for 20 minutes. So anyways, I have a conversation with Gary Stronach. He says he liked what he saw in that little time. It's unfortunate I got injured. But when I go back to the States, send him some tape because this is VHS time. And I get back to the States. I send him over some Point Loma VHS tapes. He takes a look and he likes what he sees and offers me my first pro contract for the Plymouth Raiders.
That's amazing, man. I remember everything you shared from that moment you got that call. You were working at Enterprise and you got the opportunity to go out to North Carolina. I remember I kept telling you, like, just keep pushing, you know. And guys, if you want to see the epitome of never give up, it's this guy right here, Andrew. I mean, and getting that opportunity to go to Plymouth was just a start. You know, you also had a couple of other challenges. Once you signed with Plymouth, you had a couple of good seasons. But I remember it was around maybe 2009, somewhere around there. Because the fact that you didn't have dual citizenship at the time, you were still American, and teams were only taking, 2 to 3 Americans per team. And oftentimes you kept getting overlooked because they were going for the bigger names, the North Carolinas, the big time school players or guys that didn't make it in the NBA. And they were taking those players over you. Talk about, what was your mindset during that process?
Man, those were tough times. I'm not even going to lie, because I go from, you know, at the time having a 4-year career, putting up great numbers, until I'm back home now living with you and I have nothing. And I just couldn't understand it. I'm like, you know, why is this happening? And I'm looking and I'm seeing guys getting jobs and I'm like, I'm better than this guy, you know?
Yeah.
My resume is better than this dude. And it was dark. It was really dark times. And I'm, you know, every morning I woke up praying that I would see that email from my agent with the good news.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's the toughest, having to get up. And, you know, one thing I didn't, you know, I stayed dedicated to it because I was just like, I came too far. Like, I come too far to just like give up on it now. Right. So, you know, now, you know, I see a lot of kids who want opportunities and I tell them, I say, it is the hardest thing to work and train when you don't know what you're working towards. You don't know when, where an opportunity is going to present itself. So if I told you, get up at 5 o'clock every morning and work out for a year and nothing was going to happen, would you do it? You know, and a lot of them wouldn't. You know, it's easy to work out if I got a contract in front of your face and you know you're going to this team in a month time. It's easy to get up and grind.
Yeah.
But, you know, I kind of surprised myself. It kind of showed a little bit about my character about, man, I am really dedicated. And again, that goes back to that Army lifestyle and, you know, those traits instilled in me from my dad just about being dedicated. And I stayed dedicated to it, man. And, you know, and an opportunity ended up presenting itself, you know, months down the line. But, you know, my mentality was I just come too far to just all of a sudden just
lay down,
lay down. Like, yeah. if anything, I'm going to exhaust all my resources. So if it doesn't work out, I can live with myself, go on with my life and say I did everything I could do. As opposed to if I get an opportunity and I'm not ready, I'm not in shape, or I just lay down. And then I'm like, what if, you know, so I would just, you know, I just told myself that I'm just going to go out with no bullets in this gun. I'm going to go out, whatever happens, happens, but I'm not leaving any ammo and I'm just going to keep working until I see what happens.
Just hearing you, I get emotional about it oftentimes because I watched it. I saw it all, like, you know, the ups, the downs, and, you know, it was hard for me to see that too. Not as much as it was hard for you, but knowing that you were good enough and you should be on a team and seeing that, you know, every day you're going out and you're putting this time and this work in, as you shared, with no guarantees, you know, and there's not even a hint that there would be an opportunity. And to have that mindset to be consistent and continually, you know, pushing yourself, getting up, doing the things that you don't want to do. I mean, that's what this podcast is about, and it's developing a champion. And what you did was that you developed a championship mindset. You know, in my field, in my career, and what I do is really, really hard. And, you know, you have to have that mindset that no matter what, I'm going to break through these barriers. I'm going to get through these walls. I'm going to get through these challenges. You know, Drew also, for those of you that are listening and will come across this podcast, he battled with injuries. You had a couple of hamstring injuries. You had an ankle injury. I mean, all the while, he never allowed those injuries or any of those challenges to stop him from pursuing his dream of being a professional athlete. Which brings me to my next question. 7 years in, you had faced this, you know, you had dealt with the adversity, the injuries, and still as a player having success. But then there came a point where things pivotally changed and you wound up with the Newcastle Eagles. Before the Eagles, I think you were with the Heat for 2 seasons. Guilford Heat, am I right?
Yeah, I was with the Guilford Heat for 1 year.
Yeah, that's right. 1 year with the Guilford Heat. And then I want to talk about that pivotal moment when you joined Newcastle. What impact did that have on you, at not just as a player, but as a person? Talk about that experience and what's that been like for you?
From a professional standpoint, you know, that was definitely the turning point, because I was 30 years old. I was battling a lot of injuries. I had come from a really bad ankle injury the season before. And that year, 2012, 2013, I was playing for Plymouth. I had went back to Plymouth after I finished with Guildford Heat. I thought to myself, like, you know, this is it. Like, my body was just done. So when I got the call from Newcastle, I was kind of shocked. And I remember going into the meeting with Coach Fab Flournoy, who's now the assistant coach for the Toronto Raptors. He said, "Drew, man, you could play another 10 years. And I looked at him crazy, like, what? Like, man, I'll be lucky if I make it through this season.
Yeah.
You know, and you know, that was 2013. So that's been you know, nearly 8 years ago. So he's pretty much hit the nail on the head. But, like, you know, I always knew what it took to be a pro, of the work ethic and what goes into it. But when I was introduced to Fab, I've learned how to maintain this status, you know, maintain the longevity of being a pro. I knew how to become a pro. I knew what went into it, but to be able to maintain it and have longevity, I learned it from him. Like, he opened my eyes into what it took the other side. You know, like, I had to get in the gym, work out, work hard, lift weights, you know, shoot, work on your handle. But he taught me about taking care of your body, you know, stretching, icing, you know, just lifting, but lifting differently. Just, like, really, really taking care of your body, because, you know, once you get to a certain point in your career, taking care of your body is more essential than actually physically getting in the gym and working on your game. So now at this point, you know, I spend more time on my body than I actually do practicing basketball. Because at the end of the day, when you get older, you know, your skills do diminish, but your confidence doesn't really lie in the fact of can you play. Your confidence lie in the fact of if your body is going to work.
I would say your skills may not diminish. I'll correct you on that. It's not the skills, it's the physical aspects that diminish. You know, the athleticism diminishes, right?
That's what I mean. Yeah, like, yes. Yeah.
I know what you meant. It's the physical aspect that diminishes, but the skills, I think they never die. You know what I mean? I think they, you know, it's just adapting to where you are physically. But what you're sharing is that maintenance of the body is the most important thing, right? You know, you talk about LeBron James, they talk about how he spends over $1 million a year just on his body.
$3 million.
$3 million a year. Think crazy. About that. That's that's a house in California. Yeah.
Shoot.
You know, that's what we call generational wealth for some people like you and I, just going in on the maintenance of his body.
You know, so you get to a point to where, like, you know, if I feel good, if I know nothing's hurting, everything is functioning well, I have confidence that I'm going to play well.
Yes.
If something's lingering, something's nagging,
it's tough.
I lose confidence, and not if I can play, it's if I can perform, how effective I can be. So, you know, that's how it kind of changes as you get older. But Fab really changed my mindset on how to overcome those obstacles. And, you know, I went on to changing my role as well. I went from, you know, I just tweeted this the other day. From 2000 to 2010, I led every team that I played for in scoring. So 10 years of my career, that goes from college all the way through the pros, I led my team in scoring. But then when I come to Newcastle, I'm coming off the bench as a sixth man. And this is where careers usually end for guys who are the man of their team, who was known as a star. When it's time to change that role, take a back seat, they can't adapt. So they ended up, you know, their career ends up finishing short. But, you know, I just looked at it differently. I was just like, okay, like, I always knew I wanted to play a long time. I was like, how can I still be effective?
Yeah.
I was like, so now my focus isn't on getting buckets. It's focus on what can I bring the team on a given night? What's needed? And because I feel like I'm a versatile player, I could do a lot of different things, that suited me perfectly. So, like, one night we might need rebounding. One night we might need defense. One night we might need energy. And I can fill all those roles. So that's what's allowed me to create value for myself, even at the age of 37, is that I can still be effective. And right. So, you know, being at Newcastle has changed everything as far as like professionally, because, you know, coming to Newcastle, I was able to be looked up as a winner, which yes. is, you know, in sports, that's all that matters.
That's like, all that matters.
You can put up all these numbers, but can you win? And that just kind of verified me as a player. And then that helps everything else that comes with it. You know, from a Absolutely. Business standpoint, you're more marketable. People want to associate themselves with you. So Newcastle was definitely the turning point in my life.
You're right, man. And that's why I wanted to highlight this on this podcast before we close out. You know, you have developed a championship mindset, I believe, since day one. It's been instilled in you as a kid. And the one thing that I've noticed throughout your journey is that drive never to give up and to stay true to yourself. You know, you've never gone outside of your character. I've never seen you do things that where you say, why is he doing that? Everything you've done has been orchestrated with infinite detail and purpose. And as you shared, even though there were times that you weren't sure you were going to get opportunity to play or win, there was something within you that kept believing and kept pushing you to get up and put the work and the time in. And at the end of the day, that's the epitome of developing a championship mindset that is carried over into everything in your life, from being a 9-time champion, which being a champion at any level, I don't give a damn what it is, it's hard to do. Mm-hmm. And to do it 9 times with one team, I mean, there's guys in the NBA that are known, the Bill Russells, who won 11 championships with the Celtics, the Michael Jordan who won 6 with the Bulls, Kobe 5 with the Lakers, Magic 5 with the Lakers. You did it 9 times with a professional mm-hmm. team and played a major role in all 9 of those championships. And I think that at the end of the day has to be celebrated, which I've enjoyed. And unfortunately, I haven't been able to be there in person, but being able to see the journey and watch you has definitely been a true inspiration. It's helped me along my journey too, because when there were times when I was ready to throw in the towel at what I was doing, I was like, ain't no way in hell. My cousin ain't throwing in the towel. I'm damn sure not throwing in the towel. Mm-hmm. And you've been there to support me even in my darkest moments too. And I appreciate that. It's meant a lot to me. And I know that there's a reason why we are family, and there's a reason why the DNA that flows through our bodies and in our blood, it all makes sense now why we are where we are in life and who we are as people and as men. And now seeing you as a father, and brings me to my next part of this podcast before we close out. You know, Drew is not only a professional athlete that has succeeded at the high level, he is a businessman. He has developed and built a profitable and highly reputable basketball training academy. And you are now training kids in 2 countries, virtually and also in person. Talk about the founding of DBSD Training. Where did that concept come from and what motivated you to start it?
Yeah, so DBSD Training stands for Drew's Basketball Skills Academy, which was founded in 2007. And I wouldn't even say that it was founded. It founded me. I had never thought about being a basketball trainer. And I always said that when I'm done with basketball, I'm done. I never had a desire to be a coach, anything like that. I always had the desire to be a businessman.
Yeah.
But, you know, it, like I said, it founded me in 2007. I used to work basketball camps just to earn some coins during the summer. Yeah. And in 2007, 2 kids asked me if I would work with them. And I said, yeah, sure. So, I mean, now that I look back, I'm like, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. But, you know, I was putting them
through. You're just saying yes.
Yeah, I was just saying yes. I'm just working them out, kind of just doing, putting them through what I would do. Yeah. And it comes back full circle. And, like, I truly believe everything happens for a reason, because back in, like, my junior year, I used to go to the park every single – the lights didn't come on till 11 o'clock at night. Couldn't go during the day because it was too packed. I used to go ride my bike at 11 o'clock at night and go and just work on my game.
Yeah.
I never went to a basketball camp. I never had a trainer, never had a private coach. I used to just be creative and train myself.
Again,
talking about like reflect on my life, that is when, you know, that basketball training or basketball coach was derived from when I was training myself.
Yep.
And so I founded it in 2007. And over time, like the next summer, it grew to 5 clients. And the next summer after that, it grew to 10. And, you know, and fast forward, and, you know, we work with over 100 kids in 2 different countries, physically and virtually. And I never had a goal or ambition of where I wanted this to go, unlike basketball, where I always set goals and have very high ambition. I've just kind of wrote the curtail of this. I'm going wherever it takes me. Yeah. I've kind of adapted to it. Like, I was like, okay, yeah, this is going pretty well. I got 10 clients. How can I get 15? Okay, yeah. Let me just create me a few business cards. So when I meet people, I'll just hand it to them. Then yeah. Business cards turn into a website, and then website turn into flyers. And then it's just been a slow grind and a true process. And people see us now, yeah. And they're like, wow, you're doing amazing. But people don't know I've been doing this since 2007. I used to do it outside of Creech Elementary, outside in the Texas heat. There were times where I would train from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. because I wouldn't tell anyone no, and I would go all day without a break in the hot sun. So it looks glamorous now, but I always remind my coaches and staff and people that work for me that this was, you know, a lot of work, sweat, tears put into yep. this. So, yep. you know, I'm not just going to have any – I'm really choosy about who I bring into this circle.
As you should be. And you got over a decade of developing a name for yourself and a brand now. You actually have developed a brand, the Train Harder brand, one that I've grown to really be fond of and have enjoyed watching and seeing the journey. And now you now have launched into media where you have your own podcast, and Drew actually hosts the 21 podcast, and he has also 21 media, and he's becoming a mogul at the end of the day in the world of sports and entertainment, you know. And Drew, watching you when you first started DBSD training, I remember our conversations, and we've talked about this before, and I said, hey man, you know, the future is ahead of us, but there's a point in time you're going to be able to train kids virtually, right? Yeah, and tap yeah. in the hidden. Remember we had that conversation?
I remember that.
And I talked about, you know, making that expansion, because at the end of the day, there's all this disposable income for one, for all the kids in the suburbs. And two, you can't train everybody one-on-one. It's just impossible. Mm-hmm. And you have a whole audience out there. Now here we are, COVID-19, and mm-hmm. boom, changed everything. Everybody's virtual, Zoom calls, et cetera. We're seeing guys like Kenny Smith launch with the Jet Academy virtual. And it's like, yes. I'm like, Kenny, you late, bro. My cousin been on this shit for a long yeah. time. You know what I mean? And he's excelling at the high level. And it's just been amazing, man, to watch and see your journey. I mean, Drew, you've been doing all of this basketball training with kids, developing a business model, creating a business plan, executing that. And then also while still training and preparing your mind and your body to still play at a high level, then being a dad and a husband. I mean, you've maxed out. I really, truly want to let you know that. Many people don't even come close to scratching the surface on, you know, reaching their purpose or their potential for whatever the reason is, you know, and there's reasons why, you know, not to get into that, but to see your journey and to see you just dominating your space at all levels, it's definitely something that we all should be paying attention to as you continue and go forward in your career. And as we begin to close, you talk about just your perspective on where you are right now in life, being a dad, having your second child, winning 9 titles, being married, having an amazing wife in Aisha, and a daughter in Callie Mae. And now you got the opportunity at the end of your career to walk into a front office job if you choose to. And then also you have a master's degree, which I've never heard of a basketball club playing for someone's master's degree in education. Yeah. You worked that out. Yeah. Let's close. And how do you feel now looking back from being that kid in Germany to where you are right now? Did you ever envision your life being like this? And what is it like now to have this experience?
Yeah, there's two folds to that. You talked about wearing all these different hats. My wife says to me on a day-to-day basis, you do too much in a day. Like if you were to go through my day, like I do a lot. I do a lot. And she constantly tells me. But when I reflect back on it, it's funny because like I look at it, all these things I've been able to do, and I'm like, wow, this is amazing. Like, I can't believe like I've actually been able to have all these experiences and do all this stuff. You know, I only just wanted to play basketball. You know, my dream was to play the NBA, and I never made the NBA, but so many other things have come out of this that I never thought of and dreamed of. But on the other hand, I'm like, I'm not satisfied. I'm like, man, I'm nowhere near where I want to be. Like, I feel like I should be a lot further than where I am. That's why, like, I stay hungry and I never get complacent because I feel like it's so much more out there for me to go get. So I'm going to exhaust all my resources and I'm going to try and go get it, because I told my wife this last week. I said, if I ever go, if I ever leave this earth, you tell my kids that your dad, he didn't leave anything on the table.
Yeah,
he gave it his best effort. And that's what Train Harder is all about. The motto is become the best version of yourself. And I truly give everything that I've have to try to make a better future for my family, because generational wealth is so important. You know, yes. I look at someone like Jeff Bezos. I read that he started Amazon from his garage, which I was able to really relate to, because that's kind of what I've done, starting this out the back of my car. But he was able to receive a $200,000 loan from his family.
Yes.
You know, so I think about stuff like that. I'm like, if someone just said, you know, when I was 21 years old, like, here's 10 grand, here's 20 grand, there you go, I would be so much further than I am today, because I started off in a negative. I started off my first year trying to pay off a credit card because I need that credit card to fund my life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So I was, you know, I spent a lot of time trying to catch up. And so I am devoted to making sure my kids are able to start off in the positive.
That's right. Well, as I say, somebody, you know, when you talk about black people, African-Americans, you know, when it comes to generational wealth, we know our history, we know what's happened to us, being disenfranchised, slavery, all of those things have kept us from being able to build generational wealth. And I've always said, you know, somebody has to be the first person to be that first generation. And you are laying the foundation for first generation of, you know, millionaires and first generation of building wealth for your family. And it's important because, as you said, you know, Jeff Bezos had somebody that could give him $250,000. And I remember I had a client. She was getting a loan approval and the lender was like, oh, you don't have anybody that can just give you $100,000. We see it often. We see it regularly. She's like, $100,000. Wow. Like, she's like, well, first of all, my parents don't even own a home, let alone have $100,000 that they can give me. And that's all too common in the African-American community. And I'm definitely happy to hear you share when you speak on generational wealth and what you're doing for your kids to lay that foundation so that when they get of age and they're pursuing their dreams and goals, there's, you know, not only the opportunities are going to be there because of what you've done, the relationship that you've developed and built, but the finances are going to be there for them because you put that work in. And that's important because in order to compete in society, whether it's on a business level or a corporate level, you have to have the connections, the relationships, and you have to have the resources at the end of the day. And I believe for us as Black people to be liberated and to really reach that point of freedom, it starts with economics and it starts with ownership, owning our businesses, controlling them, and, you know, being able to build foundations that our kids can be able to benefit from. And you're doing that right now. And I'm happy to be able to have had the opportunity and still seeing it and watching you grow and develop in this space. You're just scratching the surface. And, you know, the future is very, very bright for you as you continue your endeavors and what you're doing. You know, Drew is not only an athlete, as I shared, he's more than an athlete. He's a businessman. He's just launched his podcast. He has a media platform, which, by the way, he's producing my podcast that we're speaking on right now. And he's doing a lot of amazing things. So in closing, I know we've been on for an hour now. How can our viewers and listeners connect with you? Where can they go to connect with you if they have questions, if they want to train with you, if they want to pick your brain on what it takes to develop the championship mindset that you've created for yourself?
Yeah, you guys can find me on my website, drewlasker.com, or on all social media platforms under drewlasker21 on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And I'm always responding to people in the DMs. You know, people always come through, ask questions, and I do my best to take my time to try to help anybody who comes through. So feel free to ask. Don't ever be afraid to ask someone, because you'll be surprised. There's a lot of people out there that's willing to help. So
absolutely.
you got to put yourself out there sometimes. And I'll leave with this. I just saw a quote not long ago. I'm paraphrasing, but it says, if I provided you an opportunity or helped you in any kind of way, you don't owe me anything but to hold me to a higher standard than you hold everybody else. And that's how I feel about you, Rod. Like, and there's only a handful of people I feel that way. Like, I hold you to a higher level than I hold everybody else for the simple fact that you gave me an opportunity, you provided for me, and you served as a mentor. And without you, I wouldn't be where I am. And that's what I try to do. I try to pay that forward by trying to help as many people as I can, because for a lot of people out there, we just need opportunity. What you do with that opportunity, it's on you. All I can do is provide it for you. So I appreciate everything you've done for me. I'm proud of your journey. As much as I've motivated you, you've motivated me 10 times fold. We're in different spaces, but it seems like the journey is the exact same.
Parallels. It's the same.
There's so many parallels. Yep. And I want to see you win, and I'm cheering for you, and I'm thankful for you, and I love you, man.
I love you too, man. I appreciate you. And it started with Stephon. Stephon showed me the blueprint on giving back and loving people and helping people and opening doors without any expectations or anything in return. So, you know, that's a gift that was passed on to me, and I passed it on to you, and you're passing it on to others. And, you know, I'll close with saying this: relationships matter. You know, no matter what, relationships will be your greatest form of currency outside of beyond a dollar. They matter. You know, how you treat people and the way that you carry yourself, the way that you interact with people, relationships matter. So invest in people, and you'll never be, you know, short of opportunities, and you'll never go a day in your life wanting or needing anything. You know, we live in the greatest country in the world, and Drew and I believe are both living proof of the American dream. It's not about all the glitz and glamour and having a bunch of money in your bank account. It's about the relationships and the people that matter most to you and how you treat them and what you do for others. So, you know, you're having a great impact on a lot of young men and women's lives, hundreds of kids that are going to one day grow up and look back on those experiences. And just as you share with me what it's meant to you, they'll be sharing the same of what you've meant to them and how you've helped them discover who they are as people and to win in life. So with that said, I want to thank you for being available on this podcast of Developing a Champion. And you are that. You are the epitome of a champion. I'm proud to be, you know, not just your friend, but your cousin and a family member. And I'm going to continue to root for you and watch you as you go on your journey. And I'm happy now that you're a father, two-time father. And you're not going to go for a three-peat, it sounds like. But at the end of the day, man, it's blessings to be a parent. And I wish you and your wife, Aisha, nothing but success, health, wealth, and happiness as you guys continue to pursue your journey in life.
Thanks a lot, man. I appreciate it. Thanks for having me on and sharing my story.
All right, guys. Well, this concludes this episode of Developing a Champion with Drew Lasker on the All In Podcast. We are thankful and grateful to have Drew on today. And you guys that are out there, I hope you find benefit in Drew's message and his story. And until next time, you guys keep winning and keep hustling out there. Take care and have a great day. We're out. For more information on the All In Podcast, visit lavipagent.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube at RodWatson23. No matter where you are in the world, you can connect with us for motivational and inspirational content. Subscribe to this podcast series wherever you get your podcasts. Till the next episode of All In, keep believing, keep hustling, and keep putting in the work.